Hello and welcome to another episode of The Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And say hello to my little friend.
I'm not really that little. I'm like 5'8". I mean, it's littler than you, but, you know, I'm the... Anyway, I am John Anneli. I write songs about science fiction, fantasy, and other nerdy things, which you can go and download for as little as free over at johnanelio.com. I would also... I feel like we haven't said this a lot in the podcast, but you can go to functionalnerds.com, and the podcast will be there every week, but I would also recommend signing up to the RSS feed and Google Reader or whatever sort of reading device you use, because we have lots of other cool content there. Book reviews, Kathy Russell has a new book review up for Jason Sanford's new short story collection. We have our art nerd and our booze nerd and our food nerd, and there's all sorts of cool stuff that's generally up on there. So go and subscribe to functionalnerds.com. And the other cool thing that you can do for us, if you're feeling very altruistic, is go over to iTunes and give us a couple stars or write a review or something like that. That really helps with helping to spread the word about the podcast. We are fortunate to get some really cool folks on this show, but I have to be honest with you. I think some people think we're a bigger podcast than we actually are.
Well, you're not supposed to tell people that, John.
Oh, I'm sorry. No.
You know what would really help the podcast?
What's that?
If anybody knows Craig Ferguson, tell Craig Ferguson to listen to this podcast and then to mention it on the show. And I think that would really, help us and boost our ranking within iTunes. Or Adam Carolla.
Yes. If you know any of those folks, that would be great. But no, we have very nice numbers, and I'm always surprised that we have as big a numbers as we do. But I'd like to see them even bigger. So, if you're someone who likes the show, you get the show every week for free. Go over to iTunes, give us a nice rating, give us a nice review. I think that really helps with sort of throwing us up there with other podcasts in terms of like the, hey, if you downloaded this podcast, you'll like this one. So, if you got a minute, go and do that.
Do you think we should start playing podcast promos from other podcasts?
Sure. Why not?
I mean, seriously, one of the things that we've just never done it, and it wasn't like an intentional thing. We just started doing this and we never actually like played any promos, but a lot of podcasts play promos from other podcasts, and I've been thinking that maybe we should start doing something like that,
Well, I'm fine with that. I'm totally fine with any of that. So speaking of other podcasts,
segue. That was good. That was very professional. I'm impressed.
No problem.
Well, you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, literally, think a year or more of doing this, you figure something out. But our guest tonight is a co-host of the Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing podcast, and his name is Moses Sirigar. He has got a new novel out called The Black Gods War, and he came on tonight to talk about the book and talk about being an independent publisher of his own novel and, sort of the pros and cons of that and sort of his experiences with doing that, because Moses has had quite a bit of success with it so far, even though the book is pretty new. I think a lot of people know Moses and know about his book, and I think that is no small feat for an independent novelist. So if you are a writer or really a creative person of any type who's looking to sort of get the word out about your work, I think Moses had a lot of really good things to say about it, and we had a real interesting conversation with it, so I hope you enjoy it. And on the line with us tonight, we have author Moses Sirigar. He has a new book out called The Black Gods War. That is correct, right, Moses? I'm not screwing title up. And he came here to talk about the book, tell us a little bit about it, and tell us a little bit about his efforts as an independent author and getting the word out about his book, which I think Moses has probably been more successful than just about any other independent author I've seen in terms of getting the word out about his book. And before we get into any of that, I should mention that Moses is a daddy, and he has another child on the way, and he just got back today to find out the sex of that child, and the sex of that child is, drumroll,
it's a girl.
Yay! Nice.
Yeah. You guys are the first to know. I've not announced this anywhere publicly yet, so it's a Functional Nerds exclusive news story coming to you, not live, but taped
a week later.
Yeah.
what's your current child?
A boy.
So you've got the complete set. You're done.
I think so. I hope so. Yeah. I was ready for a girl the first time, and then it was a boy, and now I'm ready for a boy, and it's a girl. So that's all right. Just a little curveball.
Mm. Well, congratulations on that. That's great. So, I would actually like to get into that with you maybe a little later, sort of talking about how parenthood affects one's art. I have a 5-year-old son myself, and I think it definitely impacted my own drive towards putting art out into the world, and I wonder if that had a similar effect on you. But we can get into that a little later. But
I love parenthood.
great show.
It is. It's a great show.
Well, Moses, before we get started with any of that and any of the independent authors speak, why don't you tell people about your book that's out right now that they can get? Why don't you give a little bit of a synopsis of it and let people know what they can expect if they go and get your book?
And tell them who you are, too, just in case they don't know.
Yeah.
Sure. Some people might know me from the Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing podcast, kind of a brother podcast to the Functional Nerds. And I'm on there with Sean Farrell and Brent Bowen.
Sean Farrell.
Love Sean. Sean is the best. I've been around a little bit, blogging and stuff like that. I've been to a couple of the superstar seminars where I've gotten to hang out with like Kevin J. Anderson and Dave Farland and Brandon Sanderson, and been to World Fantasy, going to be at Dragon Con next week. Hopefully we're going to get a Parsec. Actually, we're nominated for a Parsec. So anyway, that's an honor just being nominated. And
that's what we said to ourselves too. Yeah.
Nice.
We didn't make it into the finals, but we said, hey, you know what? It's just nice to be nominated.
Your name was in there. Definitely.
It was.
I'm just kind of this, I'm just sort of like, just turned 36, and I'd wanted to write a book my whole life, especially something that was, but number two, like a drive I'd had since I was a kid was I did want to do some kind of storytelling thing with my life. And I thought initially I would make movies. I just thought I was maybe more cut out for that medium. And then over time people started telling me that they thought I could write. And so, I just decided to give that a shot. This is The Black God's War. It's about 120,000 word novel, so it's about at the upper range of what I might be able to get published as a first time novelist if I tried to do that. I wrote it as a standalone novel, but there is room for it to grow into a series, and I'm in fact working on book two right now. But I initially wrote it because as a reader, I actually kind of like standalone works. I'm not like a big fan of cliffhangers, which, you know, in a way is kind of odd because I'm writing epic fantasy. So I probably should be writing these like, you know, door stoppers that you have to read 10 books to get to the end of the story. But I don't really like to read like that. Even though there are good series that are like that, it's just not my preference. So I think
if you do ever decide to do that, you don't start off with 10 books. You say, well, I'm only going to do 3.
Yeah.
And then when you get to like halfway through the second one, you're going to say, you know what? I've been working on the plot a little bit, and I think it's actually going to end up being 6. And then around book 4, that's when you drop the bomb. Oh, you know, I just can't do it in 6. I'm going for 8 now.
Well, you know, that's kind of happened to me already because I've been saying, no, it was a standalone book. And now I'm like, well, I think it's a trilogy. You know, at least a trilogy.
At least.
I can now understand how that happens, really. but it is, you know, as far as what people can expect, they can expect if you read this book, the pacing is pretty quick. A lot of my reviewers will say that. And you get to the end and you get a complete story and you get a lot of interesting characters and they do all sorts of crazy things to each other. And I did have this one review from Olivia Blackburn. She has a blog called A Brain Scientist, Brain Scientist Approach to Writing. She wrote a really cool review on my Amazon page, and she talked about how my ending was gut-wrenching yet satisfying, which really made me smile because I think that's a little bit of the George Martin fan in me, that, you know, no one is safe in the book. And yet I'm really, really, as an author, I kind of have an ethic where I really want the ending to be satisfying for the reader. I certainly like to throw like twists and shocks in there too. But it's really important to me that the reader can walk away from that book and just feel satiated, you know.
I prefer to think of that as the Joss Whedon approach, because none of his actors are safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Moses, that's something that I think is really hard to pull off, especially in fantasy, is being a big fantasy reader. I want there to be that not only satisfying ending, but almost like that yes ending, which I guess is the same thing, but it's a little degree more. And, you know, I have to say in the last couple of years of reading, that's only happened a couple times. I may love a book. You know, I might love the world. I might love the characters. I might love what happens. But so often I get to the end and I'm like, all right, it's a pretty good ending. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes I end when it ends and it's just that yes. Yep. It's so satisfying. So why don't you tell us the ending of your book?
Okay. it's very satisfying. It's very satisfying. But that actually is like, that really is one of my top goals. And I promise, like, actually a lot of my reviews have used that word satisfying ending, which is just pleased me to no end. Because that's just, it's like an ethical thing for me. That's what I feel like. I feel like if you read a book that I write, you deserve a satisfying ending. If from anyone, really. Just because that's how I like to be treated. You know, it's kind of a golden rule principle. So that's part of where I came from with writing the story. I do think it has a lot, you know, it fits into epic fantasy, although the setting will feel a little bit more Homeric, a little more like the Iliad than, say, Tolkien, you know, or even George Martin. Because going back to a time when it's a secondary world, but it's sort of like a Greek-Roman type culture with some Middle Eastern religious themes as well, although they have a pantheon of 10 gods. It's quite a bit like the Greek and Roman gods. They're going to invade the browner people than themselves, who are essentially like think India, think like Buddhist Indians. If India was everyone was a Buddhist, they'd be sort of like that. So it is a little bit like, you know, Philip, I'm sorry, Alexander, you know, invading, you know, India or something like that. But the setup is really an homage or a homage or an homage, depending on how you prefer, to the Iliad, where you've got one culture invading another culture. They've been at war for 9-ish years. My story takes place at the end of that war, the last sort of days of that war. And you like the characters on both sides. It's the kind of story where, you know, what my readers and reviewers are saying is like, you know, I'm really torn because I go back and forth of who I think should win and who I like, and the characters just seem real on both sides. And so it's that kind of war story where it's kind of realistic in the sense that you got a lot of good people who are forced into fighting each other. And so a lot of human drama happens because of that. And there's, of course, magical stuff. One side prays to their 10 gods, and so their magic comes from that. The other side, their magic comes more from a sort of Buddhist philosophy where they have sages who have mastered certain things. They have a, you know, they meditate, and so they have deeper insight into reality, and they use that insight to make interesting things happen. So it's kind of this big grand story, lots of interesting characters, and fairly high body count by the end, but luckily I've written it in such a way that it still surprises readers and people seem to be happy with it.
That's great. So, you know, Moses, you came to my attention, mostly because just sort of being a part of the science fiction and fantasy community, on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff, you know, when your book was coming out and even, you know, the months leading up to it, it was really generating a lot of buzz. And I think that probably has a lot to do with the quality of the book, because obviously people were, the early readers of the book were speaking of it quite highly. But I think more so than just about any other independent author on my radar, you really seem to have gotten a lot of exposure for this book. So what are some of the things that you did to make that happen? Obviously, I'm my guess is that it's a ton of hard work on your part. So what are some of the things that you did to make that happen?
Right. It's that part of it. I spent time and money and energy doing things. Luckily, that part of it didn't feel like hard work, just because I think by nature I tend to be fairly social as far as like networking with people and making friends and supporting people. Like, I like to support people who are doing good things, and, you know, then that just sort of what comes around goes around with that sort of thing. So, for example, I went to, as I mentioned, a couple of the superstars, well, the only two superstars writing seminars that have been put on by those guys that I mentioned. And, you know, just hanging around those guys, it got to the point where, for example, David Farland, I also went to one of his workshops. And so he wrote one of his daily kicks earlier this year about, this was earlier in the year, where he was saying why you probably should not self-publish. And he mentioned, you know, then there's this guy named Moses Sirigar I know, and he's actually seems to be doing it right. But that's like unusual. Don't be like him, you know?
they all say that, though.
He might be the exception to the rule, but, you know. But Dave has actually kind of come around on that a little more, where he's actually recommending, I think, self-publishing more than traditional publishing to his audience right now. But that's the reason why... Yeah, because things have been changing in the industry, and he's aware of that. And but you know, that happened because I went to those superstar seminars, and you know, and I just, you know, I was around and just tried to just, you know, be a nice person and help out here and there. And next thing you know, things start happening. And another one, of course, is that I'm on the Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing podcast. So that has gotten my name out there a little bit. And I've gotten to interview Pat Rothfuss and Brandon Sanderson and all those fun guys. Guy Gabriel Kay was my first big interview that I was really intimidated to do. That was totally fun. But things like that. And then, like, for a lot of people who are getting into writing, the idea of doing, like, Twitter and Facebook and blogging, like, that's kind of something I don't really look forward to doing. And yet, I actually just get a kick out of it. Like, to me, it's fun because it's a way to interact with people. I like trying to make people laugh. I like trying to, like, share useful information. You know, maybe help someone out if they need help with something. And so there is that kind of social part of me that is just kind of natural in that role. And then a lot of it is just making friends, you know, just getting to know people. I hung out on some blogs. Like, I used to hang out on Joe Conrath's blog a lot, Dean Wesley Smith's blog here and there. There's a message board at the Kindle boards called the Writer's Cafe. And I just kind of, you know, hang out and we talk about the issues going on in publishing and writing. And if you hang around long enough and you just kind of give your opinion, eventually you'll attract to you the people that resonate with you. And so that happens. And then the other strategy sort of thing I did was I released a novella about a year ago. And this was kind of a very creative solution that could have really blown up in my face, but luckily it didn't. I released an excerpt from my novel. I actually, like, carved 15 chapters out of my 85-chapter novel, and I put them together. It actually added up to be about 20% of the novel. I think it's 22% of the novel, actually. And I said, could I put these chapters together and make it an actual interesting read just by itself? And luckily, I found those 15 chapters to make an interesting thing like that. And then I put it out there, and I got it to go for free through using sites like Smashwords. They made it free at Barnes & Noble, at iBooks. Next thing you know, earlier this year, Amazon made it free. And I probably got about 20,000 to date. I probably had about 20,000 people download that free novella / excerpt / teaser for my novel. And... you know, some people have liked it. And so that was just kind of a free way to get my name out there and try to generate a little bit of buzz for my novel, because it's enough to, if I did it right, the novella is enough to kind of give you something interesting, but also make you want to read more. Mm-hmm. So that kind of built a little bit of anticipation in there. So it, you know, it has been a lot. It has taken a lot of time, though. I've definitely been online a lot, you know, been at all these places. I hang out online, and that, you know, and I go to some conventions, like I talked about, too, and I make some friends there. And then, you know, just try to find allies and just kind of keep being out there. And so it is a lot of work. It hasn't been hard work for me, but it has taken a lot of time.
Sure. You know, and you know, I should also go back and say that, you know, you've gotten a lot of buzz. And what I want to sort of amend that statement, it's not like I found out about you because you were incessantly pimping your book, buy my novel, buy them. Because when people do that, like, they immediately just become silent to me. Like, right. Even if I still follow them on Twitter or something, if that's, I find it more a problem with musicians than, than writers to be. There are a couple of musician folks that I have followed on Twitter who are just like, that's all they ever tweet is buy my album. And you just ignore them after a while. So I think the fact that I probably heard about you much more through other people than I did through you. I mean, I've known about you for a while, and I think we've been Twitter friends and Facebook friends for a while. But, you know, it's sort of that – it's a concept that I think about quite a bit, this concept of social proof. Meaning like, well, this person who I like thinks he's okay, so let me check right. him out a little bit. And I think that in the current world we live in, I think that is really important. you know, to have sort of people backing you, have people saying like, hey, this guy's pretty cool, he's pretty good, you know. So it seems like you have a lot of people sort of in your corner, sort of out there doing that. And part of that is strength of the work, and part of that is who you are as a person. I think so much these days as an artist putting something out online is really kind of, and I hate to put it this way, I can't think of a better way to put it, but you're really selling who you are as a person as much as you are selling your novel.
Yeah.
You know, Cory Doctorow talks about that quite a bit, about how you're, you know, in you know, our current sort of ecosystem, you're much more likely to buy something from somebody who you sort of perceive as your buddy. Yeah. Rather than just some faceless whoever. I think especially for sort of younger writers and younger creative people, I think that's the way that it has to be. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up that you had mentioned in terms of self-publishing is, and sort of hanging out on the different blogs is, I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, but Chuck Wendig. Is that how you pronounce his name? Do you guys know Chuck Wendig?
I think that's correct.
Okay. He put a great blog post out today called 25 Things to Know About Self-Publishing or How to Sell a Bazillion D-Books in 17 Minutes. So if you haven't seen that yet, go and check it out. But I think, Moses, you could probably relate to that. And it's a lot of what you were just talking about in terms of how the publishing world, or just the people in the publishing world at least anyway, are really coming around to the idea of self-publishing as a valid way to do it.
I still think there's a wall there.
Definitely, but
there's still too many people that, like Moses said earlier, you know, Farland came around a little bit, but there's still a lot of them out there that when you talk to them and you say something about self-publishing, they're like, oh no. Well, what about this person? Oh, they're aberrations. Right. They're the exceptions. They, you know, they just got lucky.
Yeah, I agree with John that like the trend is very much changing towards more acceptance of self-publishing, but there is still a lot of resistance too. It depends on who you talk to, you know. I mean, some people are wide open to it now. A lot of traditionally published authors are published or self-publishing, you know, their backlist. Yes. And various things. What I think is interesting too is like the new writers. A lot of the new writers have a tough choice of, you know, do I self-publish or do I try to go with a big publisher? And I think this is something that's never happened before, where maybe some of the, you know, the more, I don't know, more promising new writers will try self-publishing first. And I know people like Michael J. Sullivan. I know quite a few others. I know another guy, David Dalglish, who's gotten a good offer from a publisher. These are people who had great success self-publishing, and then they get offered six-figure deals from publishers. You know, so
there's one thing that doesn't change in either model, and this is what people need to keep in mind. The one thing that doesn't change in either model is hard work.
I was going to say that.
you're still working hard. It's just, you know, where do you want to focus your energies?
Yep.
Even if you go the traditional route, you're going to have to bust your butt a little bit and get out there and do marketing, because they're going to do some for you, but you're still going to have to do all the social media stuff.
Yeah.
They can't do that for you. You're still going to have to go to the conventions and meet people. They can't do that for you. You're going to have to go to the cons and to the signings and all that kind of stuff. So the hard work component is there no matter what. And it's just, you know, I think the folks who are succeeding like you are the ones who are putting in the hard work on every aspect of it. You know, yeah. You're doing the marketing, you're going out there, you're like you said, you're being a nice guy. If you're a dick, no one's going to buy your book.
Yeah.
So Moses, let me ask you this question, and you don't have to get into figures or anything, but just sort of where your head is at and where sort of what some of your goals are. So you've had a lot of success in terms of the numbers of people. You'd mentioned that the novella that you'd put out had gotten up to 20,000 downloads. Now, in terms of the Black God's War and in terms of sort of your career, at this juncture, are you more concerned with getting fans, or are you more concerned with sort of turning this into a business? Are you more concerned with actually making money off of the book. And you don't have to tell me if you've made money, how much money you've made. If you want to, that's great. That's fine. But you don't have to mention any of that if you don't want to. But are you more concerned right now with building a fan base, or are you, or is money something that, you know, do you have like sort of a goal of in 2 years, I want to be making this much, or in 2 years, I want to be signed to a traditional publishing deal? Where's your head at with all of that?
Yeah, I go back and forth, unfortunately, a lot on this kind of stuff. I do one of my top goals is to be able to make a living, you know, with the writing, or at least to make a good amount so that I can justify to my wife that I keep spending a lot of time writing novels. That's pretty much the top goal. You know, and then I think about, you know, how big would you want to be and how humble would you want to be, and and I'm still working that out. But you know, I do look at it like sort of like this. Let's say it took you a year to write a book, and you sold 10,000 copies of that ebook over the life of that ebook, which is not necessarily easy to do. But then again, some people sell quite a few more than that. But let's say you could do it, you know, and let's say you sold it at $3.99 for that ebook, and you'd make roughly $270 per ebook. So that's $27,000 for 1 year's worth of work. You know, and, you know, if you have some other income, or if your spouse has some income, that's like, you know, something that you could afford to do. Of course, it could be more, you know, and then I know people getting, you know, offers for foreign deals that are doing independent publishing too, and occasional like movie options. And I do think one of the best ways to get a good traditional deal right now is to have success with self-publishing first. And that may be the track that I'm on too. I am probably, before I leave for Dragon Con, I am probably going to put in the mail my manuscript to Betsy Wolheim at DAW. I met her at the last World Fantasy. She sort of gave me the secret password so I can get a manuscript. We have like a mutual friend, Laura Resnick.
What's the password?
Laura Resnick is awesome, by the way. I got to chat with her.
Oh yeah, Laura's one of my favorite writers that I've met, and Laura is, you know, she's a writer in Betsy's stable at DAW,
and almost completely unplugged.
Yeah, and like one of the most hilarious, honest, you know, brutally honest people you'll meet too. And I feel really torn about sending that to DAW right now, because I'm scared to death she'll want to publish me, and then what will I say? You know, I feel like I need to get a certain amount of money for my time, you know, and like you hear that the royalties are down right now all over the place, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, well, if I can eventually sell 10,000 copies of this thing, you know, then there's my 27,000 that I can kind of justify it with, or maybe quite a bit more, maybe less, who knows. But it's like, gosh, you know, I feel like if I sign a deal with a publisher right now, whatever that advance is, I might not ever get any more than that. You hope you will. But it's like, could I let it go for that amount? And I don't know. I think part of me, the smart part of my brain, I think, says, keep doing what I'm doing for a while. Do it for a year or two. Get some good sales. Get some good numbers. That way, you know, you're kind of in the driver's seat where you could keep doing what you're doing, keep reaching your fans, and keep, you know, reaching some readers and make some good money. Or if I went with a publisher, I'd be more likely to get a deal that I'd be happy with. Part of me just wants to go and do it. Just do the big publisher thing right now. And because you know what happens once you, I got this book out, right? And I go to SFF World and I'm going on the fantasy forum. And I can't even mention the book. It's, you know, it's against the rules. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, I see all these readers there who are saying, oh, I'm, you know, reading this new book that came out from this big publisher, and this new book from this big publisher. And I'm like, man, you know, these people won't even think about reading my book because I'm not with a publisher right now. Yeah. You know, and as part of you is like, I want that that respect. You know, I feel like now that readers have told me it's a good book, I feel like it's a good book, and so now you want people to read it. And then it's like, then sometimes my goal is, you know what, the goal should be to get as many people to read the book as possible, make as many people, give people that ride of reading the book and enjoying it, hopefully, and maybe that should be the top goal. You know, and the money will follow when it follows. So yeah, you can see I'm still kind of in flux about this, and it could be a month or two from now that I'm a lot more clear about it, or it could be something that I go back and forth about for the next year or two. But I do feel like I have options, so that's a good thing.
And to join the little devil that's sitting on your shoulder whispering things in your ear.
Yes.
You could also go with a small press, small run, special edition kind of thing, do a Kickstarter or something to support that. and do something along those lines. You know, Subterranean does that kind of stuff. But you could go to, there's tons of these little presses, indie presses, that would do just like a special edition for your book, and then you could sell a hard copy as well.
Well, I do have hard copies for sale. I have trade paperbacks that I've done. Right now, they're done through CreateSpace. They look quite nice, actually. I've already gotten a big box of them, and I can actually make a decent amount on them. They sell on Amazon for $15, and when they sell there, I make $3. You know,
right? But I'm talking about, you know, actually, you could do a Kickstarter. You could fund the entire project. You could get yourself an artist. You could get a really nice cover. You know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a nice cover.
I know, but I'm just throwing it out there. You could do like an embossed cover, you know, like, just like what you would see coming from Tor or somebody like that.
Yeah, it would be fun to have a hardcover, but you know, it would feel kind of like, I thought about doing hardcover, but I'm like, dude, I don't know if I can sell hardcovers yet, you know. So the trade paperbacks are good. I mean, actually, my cover is pretty cool, and I got to read my book a week ago in the trade paperback, you know, which was a total thrill, and it felt real substantial, and everything felt good about it. So, yeah, I mean, you could. Most of the people doing well with indie publishing these days, they do focus on the ebooks. They might make 10% of their sales through paperbacks, even if they put a good bit of energy into it. But the ebook thing is actually, you know, you can actually make a decent amount of money with it right now. So that is my main focus. But then there are people who want paper, so you got to have that available too.
Yeah, you know, you brought up a couple things that I'd like to talk about. First of all, I think publishing is sort of in the place now that I think the music industry was in a few years back, maybe even 10 years ago, where it became where bands really, now I think the music industry is in such disarray right now where I think a lot of successful bands don't want anything to do with the record companies anymore. It's almost like they're almost unnecessary mm-hmm. in terms of the music part of it. I don't know if publishing is quite there yet where the publishers right. are. I don't think it is. Right. But, you know, about 10 years ago, the best example I can think is a band, something like the Dave Matthews Band, who built up this huge following before they were signed. And because it used to be back in the day, way back in the day, where, you know, you'd have a band and you would play clubs and, you know, the whole, and I don't know how much this actually existed or if this was all just like lore, but it was like, well, you play these clubs and record company guys sit in there and then they discover you and you get signed. And I think that did happen at a time, but this is talking like probably like the 70s and the 80s. I think by the time you hit the 90s, that wasn't really happening anymore.
I think it was.
For certain things, maybe. Yeah. But I think by the time you get into sort of the mid 90s, I think it was, you have to sort of demonstrate that you already have a following, that you already have people that are interested in coming to see you play. And this was at a time where you could make an album on your own. It was expensive to do it, but you could do it, you know, because if you go back to like the 70s or the 80s, you couldn't make an album. The home recording did not really exist. You had to go to a professional studio and it cost a fortune to record an album. So I think someone like the Dave Matthews Band is a good example because they made some records on their own in the 90s before they were signed. They built up a huge following from touring, and then they took a traditional record deal and were very successful in terms of having a run with singles and big album sales. And I feel like publishing might be sort of there right now. Where
it is for a lot of people. A lot of people are already doing that, have already done that.
Yeah, where they're pulling authors. Maybe there are. I would like to think so, but like where it's sort of somebody, you know, an editor or an agent, you know, looks at somebody who's maybe built up a little bit of something on their own first before they go.
That's the thing. I mean, you could take a trilogy you've written, you know, and you could take it to a publisher right now, and you know, they might love the book or you know, they might like you, but you're an unknown, you know, and if you can take that same trilogy to them and say, oh, you know, I've had 50,000 people read this book or read, you know, but download my books, and they can read the reviews on your Amazon page, you know, they can see what you're like on Twitter. That's the sure thing, you know, compared to the other one. So you can offer more money to that person. And that's always nice, you know. So yeah, and it's definitely happening. It definitely has happened already. It is happening. Agents are. I mean, I've actually heard this. It's kind of a hot new thing right now that agents are looking for self-published authors who have sold. You hear these, you know, magic numbers like I forget what the last one is that I heard, 10,000 books or something like that. You know, where if you've sold that many, there's you know agents who are able to pitch that to publishers for you. So it that is happening to some degree, and what's going to be interesting is that going to become the predominant model? I don't know. I mean, I think that is going to continue to happen, probably alongside with the other way of doing it, the old-fashioned way. But we're headed that direction, though, so I don't know.
Yeah, you know, just as a side, I just going to throw this out there real quick. I know a guy. He's written a fantasy novel, and I've read some of it, and it's good stuff. And I was reading, and I'm like. I've been reading little excerpts of it for a while now. I'm like, how big is this book? And he said 175,000 words. And I said, no one in hell is going to publish that.
Right.
No, I think they will. I think they will. No, they're not. So there's still some things that haven't changed, you know, like word count. There, yep. You know, 125,000 is good for an epic fantasy, you know, that's on the high end side.
Mm-hmm.
180 is not ever going to happen.
Yeah, and you can the nice thing about that one is you can just make that sucker an ebook and there you go. You don't have to worry about your word count, and it might do much better because it's really big and fat.
Mm.
Now, if that writer got a lot of sales on that book and had other books ready and blah blah blah, then maybe they could get that book published. You know, but taking it to a publisher initially, you got really long odds to get that one published.
Yeah. I think we're it might be going this way, but I don't think it's there yet, because in the podcast that we did with Mer Lafferty, and obviously Patrick knows Mer well, he does the production for the I Should Be Writing podcast, but when we had her on our show recently, we talked quite a bit about that, and Mer is somebody who's an independent publisher who has had wild success.
But the interesting thing about Mer is that's not necessarily by choice.
That's what I mean. That's my point, is that I still am a slightly baffled that, you know, a bigger publisher has not picked up her work. I mean, she has the support of the community. She does great work. It probably can sell you a guaranteed number. Yet still, I think there is a little bit of a, you know, sort of an old mentality that is going to be a little hard to change, but maybe it's in the process of changing now.
For example, David Dalglish, I mentioned, is a friend of mine, and earlier this year, he released Dance of Blades, the sequel to Dance of Cloaks, which is one of his series, and he was having like months where he was making 30,000 to 35,000 a month, just pretty much ebooks, you know, with some paperbacks too, but mainly ebooks, and selling, you know, thousands and thousands. I don't know, definitely like I would say at least 5,000 copies a month. Now that's someone who's doing really well. I don't think Mer has been at that point where she's pumping out, you know, 5,000 sales a month, but David got a really good six-figure offer from a publisher after, you know, they figured out that he's knows what he's doing. So the ebook thing is kind of a whole new world, and the rules for it and what makes you successful in that realm and how to make it work, it's pretty different than the old system. I've talked to some traditional published authors who are kind of stuck in some old ways of thinking where they're not really selling a whole lot of ebooks. And it's because they're not really in tune with how to sell ebooks in some cases. So you got to kind of figure it out, and then once you get those numbers, the money talks.
Now, Here's what I want to know. Here's what I want to know. I'm sorry, John.
That's okay.
You got the person going out there selling the ebooks. They're doing well. They get the six-figure offer from the traditional press, and then now they're in that environment. And what does that do to their creativity? You know what I mean? Because when you're doing it on your own, it's you. So you did all the editing for your book. You decided the direction it was going to go. You didn't have someone else coming back and saying, you know what? I really like this, but I need you to cut out chapters 14, 12, and 7 because I don't like the way they're going. You know, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be an adjustment for a lot of people. Although I do think those books will be more professional when they go through that sort of meat grinder that you're going to get with a traditional publisher. You know, you'll get better copy editing and all that good stuff, proofreading and everything. But you know what? Here's what I think about that. A lot of the big successes in indie publishing are successful because they write a lot of books really fast. Hmm. And that's what I think is going to be interesting for some of these folks when they go to a big publisher, where they're not putting out six novels a year.
Right.
And they're not selling them at $2.99 or $3.99 or $4.99. They're selling them at like $10 and prices like that.
Yep. So, thank you for this book. We'll have it in press in 18 months.
So what's going to happen when they're putting out a couple books a year at $10 a pop instead of six books a year at $2 or $3 a pop? Because what made them so successful in the first place was, you know, you can kind of game the Amazon system by releasing, you know, cheap books with decent covers and, you know, good enough writing. And you release enough of those, you're going to probably sell some before too long. You're going to make, you know, a good bit of cash doing that. But what's going to happen when they're playing by different rules and what worked for them in the first place isn't necessarily what's going to work for them in the second place. If they're good writers, I think they could be successful. You know, they could be successful and they'll get good editing and so forth. That's one thing I do think is a little odd, that agents and publishers are looking for self-published authors who have gotten a lot of sales. And a lot of times you get sales because you have a 99-cent ebook mm-hmm. that just goes, you know, just the Amazon algorithms recommendation system snowball just starts happening. And next thing you know, you're selling like mad. Like a friend of mine, KC May, wrote a very good book, The Kinshield Legacy. She sold like very modest numbers of that book for about a year. Like let's say maybe 100 to 300 copies a month or something in that range. Maybe I'm undercutting her a little bit, but something in that range, right? She pumped it out there for a year, got great reviews, got it reviewed by all kinds of book reviewers. The book had really high star rating on Amazon. She dropped it to 99 cents on Amazon after a year from, I think, $2.99. And this summer, she started selling about 5,000 copies a month of just that book because the snowball got going on Amazon where it was recommended all over the place. People who bought this book also bought that book. And, you know, you're on the bestseller lists and you're on the Listmania lists. And then it's automatic. She didn't even have to promote anymore. Didn't have to do a darn thing. Just put the thing at 99 cents. She's going to sell 5,000 copies a month. What worked out great for her is that then she just released a sequel, which costs $4, which means she makes about $2.70 from every copy of that one. She's selling just as many copies of the sequel at $4 now, you know, as she is actually still of the 99-cent book. But the point I was starting to make there is that a lot of these agents want people and publishers are kind of like curious and interested in people who are selling a lot of books. But sometimes what makes the sales happen is just 99 cents. And doing some smart promotion. I mean, writing a good book, absolutely. But for a lot of these indie rock stars, it's at the 99-cent price point that makes them sell obscene numbers of books.
Yep.
And it doesn't mean that that book is any better or worse than another book at $5 that isn't selling at those numbers. But the publishers want the one that looks like the sure thing that's selling 5,000 copies a month. But it's largely a function of that price. So weird stuff going on.
Yeah, you know, and I guess, you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask is that, you know, in terms of independent authors, and you're talking about people having big sales, I think I know for me, speaking as a musician and putting songs out there, I've come to my strategy over the past 6 months to the past year is that I want fans more than I want money. So to me, everything has been about getting people on my mailing list. And I hear musicians talk about that a lot, but I don't necessarily hear writers talking about that a lot, about a mailing list. So is that something that you think about? Is it something that writers in general think about? Maybe Patrick, you can even get in on this, because I don't really hear writers talking about that at all. And I think the mailing list, if it's a genuine mailing list, I'm not talking about going and buying a mailing list, I'm talking about getting people to willingly sign up for your mailing list, is, because I think I know just from my own experience over the past year, and particularly over the past 6 months, it is the most powerful thing you can do as a content creator, is to build a legitimate mailing list and to treat it with absolute respect and care, because it can be your biggest friend, but you can screw it up pretty quickly if you spam your mailing list. Right. Is that something you think about at all? Like, what are you doing to build your, like, because yeah. I think Twitter and Facebook and everything, it's all great, but you know, Twitter could be gone in 6 months. MySpace yeah. happened like that, you know, so all your friends could be gone, whereas a mailing list is much more valuable. So what are your thoughts on that, and what are your thoughts about in terms of a writer and an independent writer specifically?
I've been thinking about that very thing the last 2 or 3 days even. I really do want to build a mailing list. I think from a business standpoint, from a point of like surviving, it is a really good idea to have that for all the reasons you said. And I've read some people who talk about doing that, and I need to make a stronger effort to put that together. Right now I have, like, at the back of my book, if you read my book, it'll say, oh, you know, send me an email with a little note that says subscribe, and I'll add you to my mailing list. And you can go to my blog, and there is a little link at the top that says subscribe, where people can also do that. I have found so far it's really hard to generate, you know, even though I've had people who seem to like me and my book, it's hard to get the emails. But I this is something that actually I've just thought about today. I was like, you know, I need to really make a stronger effort to do this, because yeah, it's a smart idea to build that sort of thing up. I mean, in terms of like building fans, like, you know, wanting fans versus money. I mean, I am finding that like a really cool thing has happened to me this month. Okay, my novel just came out. People have read it, and I've probably heard from at least 5 people now who have actually read my book and said, "When is book 2 coming out?" You know, it's crazy, you know, it's great. And it's just like, wow, really? I mean, of course, you know, it's not coming out real soon because I just spent 2 years writing this one. But that's like my first sense of really having fans, of like people who are yeah. waiting on my next book. And the best way to generate that is to write a good book that people want to, you know, they want to read where they want to read the next book. And maybe if you don't hear from them, they'll still keep you on the radar because they want to know when book 2 is coming out. But ideally, yeah, you want to be able to send those people an email as soon as your book does come out, because then they'll go out and buy it, you know?
Yeah, I've noticed since, and here's the thing, I have 2 thoughts on this, and then we should probably, Moses has been an awesome guest and we've been talking a long time, which is great. We should probably start wrapping it up fairly soon. But the last point I want to make on that is, I have noticed since I started focusing on that, sort of the exponential power of having that mailing list. I think the way that I built mine, and I think a lot of musicians is, you know, you have to give people something for joining yep. it. So yep. I think so it's easy for me because there's a great site called Bandcamp that I use where you can download my stuff for free, but you know, you join the mailing list to do it. And it's pretty straightforward. And I think most people are willing to do that to get that free music. So I think what authors should, you know, or this is just my suggestions to the author community out there, write a little short story. Yeah. Have it on your website and be like, hey, short story, free, sign the mailing list. And I use a site called FanBridge for my mailing list. And I think you could probably set it up where you could just put a PDF of a short story. And as soon as someone fills that out, they will get immediately sent an email with how to download that PDF. And I think that's something that authors could really do to leverage, you know, getting some folks on their mailing list. So,
That's exactly right. And I have been thinking that, like, what's the free thing I can give away? And do I want to write a short story or, you know, that's exactly right.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to do it. So, well, anyway, we are running out of time here, Moses. I would have liked to have gotten into some of the music stuff, but we will definitely have you on again. Maybe perhaps when book 2 comes out, or you know, maybe when you're rich and famous from all of this going well, we can beg you to come back on and give us a few minutes of your time in, like, you know, a couple months from now.
So. He's already doing better than us because Sanderson and Ruthfuss don't return my emails. So.
yeah. Well, anyway, so Moses, why don't you give sort of the final, you know, kind of push, you know, you can tell people where they can get your book, your website, your Twitter, all that stuff.
Okay, thanks. The main website / blog is sciencefictionfantasy.net, sciencefictionfantasy.net. And from there, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter and Goodreads and YouTube and probably a few other places. My book, the ebook, is currently available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Smashwords. I still have to upload it to iBooks, but that should be happening before too long. And AdventuresInSciFiPublishing.com is another podcast that I'm a co-host with. It's really, I don't know, it's cool to be on. I'm a big John A fan because of the music, and we don't really get to talk about the music thing too much today, but that's a big thing for me. You know, as I write, there's a lot of I'm always powered by the music. I'm really lucky that I can write to really loud music with lyrics, because I get like a lot of emotion and energy from that, and so a lot of my work has that kind of fueling it. And speaking of music, you can go to my blog. I put together a playlist for my next book. You can check out. I found some really amazing songs. There's about 20 songs there. And I did like a contest. I told people, recommend a song, and if I choose it for my playlist, I'll send you a free book. So 20 people were getting, you know, free trade paperbacks of my book. And I put together this like phenomenal playlist that is, you know, what I'm going to listen to when I write the next book. And that's how I know the next book is going to be good, because that music is good. So it's going to keep inspiring me the whole way. So it's really cool to be on the show with you guys. And I applaud John for what he does with music, because I love it. And it's just a beautiful thing. So,
oh, thanks, Moses. That's nice of you to say. Thank you, man. Cool. Well, it was a delight to have you on tonight, and we will surely be talking to you soon. And, you know, Patrick and I wouldn't mind being on Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing at some point. So, you know, if we want to do
absolutely.
Crossover podcast or something.
Yeah.
I suggested that to Sean already, that we needed to do a crossover.
We'll do a crossover, and we can have us, and maybe we get Murr and SF Signal, and we can have Power Pack and X-Force.
That would be a lot of fun. That would be a lot of fun.
Well, we should try to work something like that out. Well, Moses, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
And we're back. Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Moses. Go check out his book, The Black Gods War. Also, go check out Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. If you like our podcast, you will certainly like that one. We have a lot of the same authors on. Funny enough, I don't think we often hit like on the same week with like the same author. But if you like this sort of thing, you'll definitely like that podcast as well. Once again, go to functionalnerds.com and go to iTunes, give us a rating and give us some stars. For me this week, nothing in particular out, so you could just go to johnanelio.com and you can go and follow me on twitter.com/johnanelio and Facebook and all that jazzity jazz. Patrick, what do you have going on?
I was just going to say, you know, Sean Farrell has come on SF Signals podcast a couple times now. Mm-hmm. We did that whole massive crossover thing that you hated, where we did the Summer of Sci-Fi trivia. We gave away a bunch of books. So he's been on over there a couple times. So that was kind of cool. Just as part of our panels.
Are you talking about the massive crossover in terms of comic books, or?
Well, we did we did the massive crossover where you had to listen to each podcast to get a trivia question, and you're like, "Oh, you know, I hate that with comic books," and it's like,
"Well, with comic books, don't make it sound like I hate those other podcasts." You meant
John Anelio hates all other podcasts.
I don't.
He hates them so much he's throwing stuff.
I'm throwing stuff. I hope I just didn't wake up my kid.
Oh, gee.
Problematic, yeah. Anyway.
No, I'm just teasing you. I know you don't hate all of the podcasts. But no, he's been over there, so that's been kind of cool. I took a break from podcasting. We all did, I think, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Murr took like a month, but she didn't intend to, because she ended up getting sick. Mm-hmm. We took like a week and a half off, something like that. Over at SF Signal, I took a couple weeks off because I was going to Worldcon, and so I'm trying to ramp that back up and get that going again. ATFMB.com, twitter.com/ATFMB, Facebook occasionally, Google now sometimes, but you can't find me under ATFMB, I don't think, because it wouldn't let me do that. So, but I'm there occasionally. I'm still waiting on the agent. So I've got an agent reading my novel, and I'm still waiting.
I gotcha.
There's a lot of waiting involved in that. You know, it's kind of funny because we just talked to Moses about the whole independent thing, and I decided to try at least to go the traditional route. So I've got an agent reading it. Apparently like it enough to ask for the full manuscript, and so now I just have to wait, which is part of the traditional publishing route. You wait.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, good luck with that, sir. All right, everybody. Well, we will be going. I hope you all have been having a good week, and we will see you next time.
We won't actually see them.
No.
locked on their own deep in space. Yes, they say Wilson Cole was a hero and the captain of the Teddy R. He kept up the fight and he did what was right as he led his fleet through the stars. Then it came to 1967, after the ship's mutiny. They made a deal with David Copperfield and they allied with the Valkyrie. And he didn't make much of a pirate. Wilson was an honest man. He went and retrieved a tale of two cities and decided that he'd change his plan. Yes, they say Wilson Cole was a hero and the captain of the Teddy R. Kept up the fight and he did what was right as he led his fleet through the stars. And then they became mercenaries.